the road, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Go. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Ghost reporting for duty here on a Thursday. Happy to be with you for the next hour like we always are here on Sportscaster. Mondays and Thursdays are our day, noon Eastern live. This is live if you're watching us now. And joining us today is our former colleague at MMA Junkie and soon to be a sports editor over at the Daily Express in the UK, Simon Head. What up, mate? How you doing?
Yeah, it's good. It seems I only left like a day ago. And now I'm a former colleague. I've been kicked to the curb very quickly. But it's a pleasure being on. It's always good chopping things up with you guys. So, what a week. What a week to be on. There is so much going on this week. It's crazy.
There is. Yeah. It didn't even feel right saying former because as of yesterday, you were still working your last shift. I saw you post that as well and a little tear came down my eye. Really, really sad to see you go. But as this show right here proves, and it's not just a farewell show or anything. It's just something where we really need to keep talking to as many journalists as we can, not just the fighters and the managers and everybody else, because I really think that's where we can give the sport the most respect, because we're the ones that can cover it as objectively as we can, you know, when it comes to new matchups, results, previews, controversies, things like that. And you're definitely one of the best in the biz.
I appreciate it, man. And if the times can work, you know, I'm more than always happy to come back and jump on with you guys and do this every now and again as things go on. You know, when you're sort of running down that list of potential guests and everyone's saying we can't make it, the cleaning lady's not available, and your next door neighbor's walking the dog, I may just be able to take that call and come on and talk some MMA with you. So always good to come on.
Very cool. All right. Well, guys, here's the thing. I'm in California. I've been on parent duty a little bit. And our parents are fine. They're healthy. They're vaccinated. But still, there's a lot of things I needed to help them with. I was with mom for like a few appointments yesterday. Doctor's appointments, checkups, you know, because we've been away from the doctors. Everything has been Zoomed. And guess what? The shooting that occurred in Orange, California, I don't know if you guys have heard of it, but we had another mass shooting here in the United States in Orange, California. Literally happened, guys, blocks away from where myself and our mom were, because in between two appointments. I couldn't believe it. It was kind of chilling, actually, to see that it took place in the same city that we were in for like 4 hours throughout the morning. Our thoughts and prayers are definitely with those families. And I just can't believe the city so close to where Goz and I grew up is going through this, because that is just terrible. It's a tragedy. And I can't believe that continues to be the news as of late, man. I wish we could report, you know, more good news, like more people getting vaccinated, more countries getting back to normality, things like that. But these types of things definitely dominate. And I wasn't even aware of it because we were jumping from here to there, here to there. And guys, I got home last night and Goz is telling me about Nate Diaz. I found that out hours later, after everybody, the whole world knew it. So I've completely been unplugged. You guys are gonna have to carry me.
Dude, there. So when you think about the landscape of, by the way, are we buckling up or?
Oh yeah. So, no, we're just going.
All right. We're just going. All right. Yeah. So, when you think about all the crazy things that are happening, because MMA now, the MMA news encompasses so many things, right? You look at Anderson Silva, he's going to fight Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. in boxing, okay? We already have Frank Mir doing this in boxing. And now they're talking about Oscar De La Hoya coming back, and we were throwing out some possible candidates. I like Tyron Woodley. I'm telling you, it's not that far off on in weight. I don't think he's going to have a home. I think it's perfect for him, and they want a big name. Oscar De La Hoya says he wants a big name. That's a big name, a former champion. I think they can sell that. You got that going on. Then Nate Diaz out of nowhere all of a sudden comes out and says he wants a fight. And who was it? It was Vicente Luque that called him out, Nate Diaz, right? And people were saying, ah, you wasted a call out. What, that guy's never going to fight. Here he is. He wants to fight. Endeavor's losing their mind. I mean, dude, this is a crazy time in mixed martial arts right now.
Madness. Madness. Yeah. There's so much going on. And
we'll take them one by one. We'll take them one by one. I'm sorry, Simon. Go ahead. Say what you're going to say, and then pick one of the stories, and we'll tackle it.
Yeah, it's just a crazy, crazy week for the sport. We've got a new heavyweight champion who is one of the scariest men on the planet. But do you want to know the strangest thing about this? His title reign might only last one fight because of who potentially could be fighting him next. But that's not clear cut because of everything that's been going on social media this week with Jonny Bones Jones very publicly looking to squeeze as much money, quite rightly, out of the UFC for this potential title fight. You've got Leon Edwards is finally getting himself a big fight against Nate Diaz. Darren Till was potentially a fight away from taking on Israel Adesanya. He's broken his collarbone and he's going to be out probably minimum 8 weeks before he can really start training properly again. All hell is breaking loose around the sport. We've now got a lightweight title fight coming up. The only thing we need to hear, I think, we need Bilal Muhammad to get a fight. I know we talked about Leon Edwards. The UFC have done him a solid. They've given him a huge fight. Bilal needs a big fight. A Wonder Boy Thompson, a Vicente Luque even. Someone in that upper echelon, in and around where Leon's ranked. I think Bilal had that fight, lost it through no fault of his own. Come on, UFC, do the man a solid. Give him a big fight. He deserves it.
Agreed. And don't forget, today, guys, is day one of the Venom era. The Reebok era is over. There is a lot to unpack.
There is. We're going to do it one by one. And, of course, my luck. Look at the pen that Dad leaves me. Look at the little amount of ink that's left in this pen. I'm going to write it down right here because I was losing track. So the first one that comes to mind is Bilal Muhammad. I'm writing down Bilal. Bilal Muhammad, what have you guys heard about his eye? Was it something that I know he didn't have serious damage and he seemed to come out of the fight healthy? So has Bilal been stating that he's ready to take an assignment, or do we still need to like go through and like come back in 6 weeks? Let's check the eye one more time. Have you guys heard anything about that one?
I'm just double checking from our old article. It sounds like he kind of got away with one a little bit. And I think he's just got, where are we? He's got no contact until April 4th, which is obviously this week. He's suspended until April 13th overall. So basically, once the swelling's down and everything's okay, he should be good to go. So given a bit of a recovery time, a bit of time to just sort of, you know, reset, maybe get himself back into training again, I would imagine he'll be absolutely champing at the bit to get back in there maybe in the next month or two, assuming that you know, there are no other lingering issues from that fight with Leon, because as I say, it was the biggest fight of his career. He had an opportunity to fight a number three guy in the UFC official welterweight rankings, and yeah, it might not, you know, the fight might not have been going fantastically brilliant for him. I think Leon was beginning to hit his stride until those unfortunate eye pokes kicked in, but he was still in the fight and he was still competitive in the fight. So to have that taken away from him, the obvious thing for him would have been the rematch. Leon didn't seem too high on having the rematch because let's not forget, Bilal was a short notice standing opponent for Khamzat Chimaev.
Right.
So who knows what's going to happen for Bilal next? But I do think that because Bilal was prepared to step up on short notice and take on a big high ranked guy like Leon Edwards on such a long win streak, then he deserves an alternative opponent of similar stature within the division. I don't think it would be fair to then ask him to go and fight someone ranked 10 to 15 in a division. I think you've got to give him top 10, circa sort of top five if you can. Or if Khamzat is available, and it sounds like he's gradually on his way back, maybe Hamzat's the guy. So I don't know. I mean, I just think that Bilal, having done everything right, everything basically fell apart through no fault of his own at all. I think the UFC needs to take care of him and give him another opportunity to win his way into the top five. That's what I would like to see anyway.
I think Vicente Luque is a good name because I feel like, you know, he just fought. He's in Brazil right now. He wants to hang out there for a little bit, which is probably enough time to give Bilal to get to April 4th and start building things back up. I think they're on a good trajectory, and they're both those guys that are just on the outside looking in on all the madness. So I think it's like one of them's got to go. You match them up together. I think it's a good thing. And then Leon Edwards, I would have liked to see that rematch, but I understand why they went the way they did. What I don't understand, guys, is this. Here's what I'm thinking, all right? You got Khabib Nurmagomedov. He's gone, right? You got other five big names that have just retired within the last year. You got John Jones playing hardball. It's just kind of weird that Nate Diaz came out of nowhere. Is this the UFC maybe caving in a little bit on whatever Nate Diaz has been asking for because of maybe feeling a lack of some of these superstars? We got to bring some of these guys back into that rotation. We always say the UFC moves on, but could this have been the one time where whatever crazy thing, and I promise you it's a crazy thing, Nate Diaz was asking for, they said, we got to put some big names on some big cards and get things moving here. Could they have caved a little bit here?
That's a perfect pivot, all right? But let me say a couple things real fast. When Edwards was matched with Nate, I thought, somebody doesn't want that rematch if Bilal's ready. And Leon has said he doesn't want the rematch, or it could be the UFC just wanted to get away from the rematch, or despite the fact that Bilal has been cleared sooner rather than what that injury on that night felt like he might be out 6 months, you know, maybe he does have to take some time off and just reevaluate. Because remember, he had the two fights very close to each other. One of them only played out, you know, until the eye poke. It wasn't a full fight per se, but still, there is a lot of stress with two camps, two fights, two weight cuts. So maybe he just wanted a little bit of time off. And Leon Edwards, to make up for those 18 months that he was gone, he wanted action. As far as Bilal versus Vicente gave him a loss once. So now you're putting Vicente in a possible position where he may say, well, I kind of beat him, and I'd like to fight someone higher as well because now I'm on a roll. You know, beating Woodley has been kind of like the springboard that kind of gets you to the title shot itself, or at least into that for sure number one contender fight. And then Khamzat Chimaev, that's great that apparently he is feeling better because I had heard that he was still just not, you know, feeling fully fit after his long battle with coronavirus. So that's very great news to hear. And then get this, guys. I'm going to piss you guys off even more. Rather than going straight to Nate and John, which we'll go to in just a second, some stupid thought occurred to me. Would you rather fight Khamzat Chimaev now, coming off a difficult spell where he may not be 100%, and he's still green, I guess, as an MMA fighter, or would you rather fight him in 8 fights when he is that monster? He's back to being that monster. And, you know, he's been winning most of the time, maybe all of them, but he's fallen in love with his hands and he's willing to kickbox and box more rather than that wrestling he's been using to steamroll. Although Gerald Meerschaert might say, hey, did you not see my fight? What are you guys' thoughts there?
Who are we, though? We're Bilal Muhammad?
You're just a welterweight. You're Bilal Muhammad. Yeah.
I want him now. I want him now because I understand why you would wait later. You know, it's more mileage. It's more fights he's going through and all that. But if he does get on a roll, I don't want any piece of that.
What Floyd did to Canelo. Floyd got Canelo very early, you know. Very smart of him. Canelo was just growing and getting better. I'm not saying that he couldn't have beaten Canelo a year later, 2 years later. I don't know. But I still thought that was pretty smart. What do you think, Simon?
I think it depends who you are in the division. I think... And who else you could potentially be fighting. I think if you're someone who's on the verge of breaking into title contention, you don't want any part of Khamzat Chimaev. That's why it was so interesting that Leon took that fight initially, because there's almost no upside to facing him at this point. You know, he doesn't advance your stock because you're ranked above him. And if you're maybe 1-2 fights away from a potential title shot, you don't touch him. You leave him well alone. But if you're in that sort of 10 to 15 range, and you know that Chimaev is being projected as being this top 10, top 5 guy, then you can beat him, and then that's a springboard into you know, the top five potentially. But if you're Bilal Muhammad, I don't think that's a fight that should interest you, to be honest with you. I think, but if you're someone who is ranked a little bit lower down, then maybe. But I mean, Hamzat Chimaev, it's really interesting. He's in this position where he's not ranked. He's only had a few fights. He's jumping weight classes, and no one wants to fight him. He's got a tough out when he comes back. He needs someone to say yes to him.
I got
and
another
it's
one.
Even harder once he wins that fight, because then he's going to be ranked, and then people are going to have to say yes to him. So I wouldn't want to face him particularly at this point. I think I think if there's another fight against a higher ranked guy who's a bit more of a known quantity, I'd take that fight every day. And
should Tyron Woodley tell Dana, FaceTime me, please? It's important. I need 2 minutes. And then when Dana goes, "What's up, kid? Hey, I want one more. Give me Chimaev. If I lose, boot me out of the UFC. If I win, we talk a contract." Right? Don't you shove all your chips in when your back's to the wall, and maybe take the guy that's supposedly the scariest one out there, because Woodley might have some of the, I mean, he's got those wrestling skills, but he's 39 and he's about 15 years removed from when he was at his all-time best in his wrestling. But he has the wrestling and the muscle memory, you know, the techniques to maybe stop some of those takedowns and then square up and match that power. But again, either way, he's going to take the matchup no one else wants. It would have a big spotlight on it. That's a co-main. That's maybe its own fight night. But if they don't want to do it because of Woodley's losing streak, then for sure it's like a co-main or a featured bout on a pay-per-view or an ABC type of fight card. I don't know. What do you think? Is that what fighters should look to do maybe when they're in this type of position?
I think with Tyron Woodley, I actually advocated for that exact matchup on the BritPak podcast that we recorded last night. And the reason for this is very simple. Tyron Woodley, I thought Tyron Woodley looked great against Vicente Luque until he didn't. You know, he looked absolutely fine until all of a sudden the little seesaw just went the other way, and then it all went very badly wrong for him and he lost. And that's four losses on the spin. But three of those losses were against guys who've either won or fought for a world title. And the fourth one is Vicente Luque, who's on a bit of a tear right now. So you have to kind of balance all that up. And if I'm looking at Tyron Woodley's situation right now, and I'm looking at you're kind of looking at what the UFC would want to do. If they don't just want to get rid of him, because let's not forget, he's probably a reasonably high earner. The UFC are kind of cutting the roster back. Letting him go on a four-fight skid is not out of the question. And the Bellator 170-pound division, if I were Tyron Woodley, is looking pretty attractive right now. I think that would be a nice little opportunity for him to jump over, be competitive, work with Scott Coker again from his old Strikeforce days. And that's an option. If he wants to stick around for one more, fight the guy that no one else wants to fight. Because here's the thing. He fights Chimaev, who's coming off a lengthy illness, as we just mentioned. If he beats Chimaev, he's back in the mix again. He's beating the guy who Dana White is incredibly high on. Because that make no mistake, if Chimaev runs through Tyron Woodley, Chimaev's in a title eliminator next. You know, that's an absolutely nailed-on cert. So I think if you're Tyron Woodley and you want to stick around and you want to do one more, that's the one to do. Because the UFC aren't going to gradually grow him back up the roster like they are, you know, like, for example, Carlos Condit, as an example. He went through a bit of a bad run. He lost quite a few in a row. UFC kept him around, kept giving him fights, and he's gradually working his way back up. I don't know if they would have that sort of patience with Tyron. I think if you're Tyron, you need to make a really big splash with this next fight if you're staying in the UFC. If not, maybe see if you can do some business with Scott Coker. I think he might have missed the boat for the PFL welterweight season right now. So it's really Bellator or bust, I think, if you're Tyron Woodley. I think that'd be a great landing spot for him. But if he sticks around for one more, the Chimaev fight is, I think, the perfect fight. And it works for both parties, right? Because if Chimaev wins, thumbs up for the UFC. They've got an instant contender who just beat a former champ. If Woodley wins, the former champ's back in the mix again. And for the UFC, they can still build Chimaev because he's still green. He's only three or four fights into his UFC career. Everyone's a winner. So that's what I would do. Totally agree with you, George. That's exactly what I would book.
There's one thing you got to
ask again. What nights does it drop and where can people find it?
BritPak, actually, we were late this week. We were late this week. We normally record on a Monday and drop the show on a Tuesday, but because I was feeling a bit under the weather on Monday night, we actually recorded it last night. So, and go to the BritPackMMA.com, and that'll take you to like a link tree site, and you can go off to Apple, Spotify. We've got a Substack where the podcast lives, and we're going to go video soon. And then everything will live on YouTube from that point on. We've got a YouTube channel as well, which is all just audio only stuff at the moment. But that's me and Chamath Karsandhu, another former MMA junkie staffer. So, he's over in Toronto. I'm here in the UK. And once a week, we just sort of get around a microphone and shoot the breeze, talking all things MMA. It's good fun. Much like this.
I don't want a Mike Pence moment. So you guys let me know if that fly lands at me. Have you seen me spot myself? That's what it is. I'm in California. We got more bugs here than in Vegas. In Vegas, we just have scorpions and snakes. Goes, what's on your mind?
Well, I was going to say there's just one thing in your scenario that you said that I would just tweak if I'm Tyron Woodley. I'm not doing a co-main event. I'm doing a main event on a smaller card just because I want that guy at five rounds. I really want to pound those lungs and make him go the distance if I can, take him into the later rounds. Smart. I would do that. But then again, this is the weird thing. Back to Nate Diaz. That fight's a co-main event, and it's five rounds.
Yeah.
So who knows what the hell is going on and why they do those things. I think what it comes down to with Tyron Woodley is he needs to figure out what it is he wants to accomplish in this sport. Does he have one or two? Does he have maybe five left? If he's looking more for longevity, then I don't know if I take that fight, because your bargaining power, if you take a loss like that, which will probably be a devastating loss, which is what everybody's been tackled with Chimaev, it's probably not going to be good wherever you go, because now it's going to be five. It's probably not going to look too good. So if he feels like he's got an in with Bellator or something, then I would probably just take that. Because even if he wins, in the UFC, he's just not well-liked. The fans don't really cheer too much for his fights, his fighting style, and Dana, his boss, doesn't really get along with him well. So sometimes there's been a few fighters that have left and just said, you know what, just that whole mindset and worrying about the way I'm being treated, Chris Cyborg is one of them. They said that alone is a relief and allow them to train better and fight better. So if he has an in with Bellator, with Scott Coker, I'd probably take it. But if he feels like maybe he's got one or two left, then I think you do the UFC one, because you're going to make more money there.
Does Bellator want a fighter coming off a four-fight loss? He's marketable, but he's coming off a four-fight loss, and sometimes you get the feeling Coker wants to either homegrow his own talent or not get caught up in those storylines when someone says, geez, potentially a guy coming off a four-fight loss could be fighting your champion soon. What would that say about your brand, blah, blah, blah. Whereas one championship, I think you can get a fresh start. Regardless of what you bring over doesn't matter too much. Like Simon said, PFL, the ship might have sailed because – it looks like they got their 12, and I don't know that they would want to take someone new on this slate, and maybe a four-fight losing streak also doesn't whet their appetite. Who knows? Sounds terrible that we're saying this about Tyron, because he's fought, like, literally, if you look at the USA Today MMA Junkie rankings, he's lost to 1, 2, and 3, and then wherever we place Luque, you know, I'm not sure. I think the rankings were released, but Luque's up there now, too, and he's above Woodley, so... Man, tough spot for Tyron. And then I was thinking, over at Bellator, it would be a reunion with Scott, who was with Strikeforce, but it'd also be a reunion with Showtime. And goes, you said, what does Tyron want to do? I think he wants to compete a little bit more, but that guy wants to get into acting. And why not start rubbing elbows with Showtime? I mean, you saw what he did when he got the TMZ assignment. You can tell that guy went a little Hollywood, you know, and he made the most of it. So could that be something that's on his mind? Tyron's always a few steps ahead of everyone else.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I think that would be kind of a nice bridge. We've seen what a lot of, just with Bellator and like Paramount and some of the elbows that they've been able to cross promote and touch elbows with those people. It kind of worked. Michael Chandler, I think we saw him a couple times at some of them country music awards and people he met that he still keeps in contact. So that's a good point.
Okay, and then moving on to Nate. Were you saying that the UFC may have wanted to just, like, create this big fireworks show over here to take the attention off, you know, that controversy, the controversial stuff that's going on with John Jones? Was that your point? Or is that a way of jabbing John Jones? Like, hey, we're still writing checks. Conor's about to sign with Poirier. We got Masvidal training. He's fighting Usman, we got Nate, three notorious tough guys to deal with. It's you, pal. Like, how do you guys look at all that? Simon, you go first.
I don't think they're related, I'll be honest. I think the situation with Nate is Nate was only ever going to come back for something big. And I don't necessarily, and I'm a Brit, right? I don't think that he was holding out waiting for a fight with Leon Edwards. I think it's what comes after the fight with Leon Edwards. And everything that they've done here, for me, just sets the table really well because, number one, he's in a five-round fight. So they've broken their own rule. They've set a new precedent now. Co-main event, non-title fight, five rounds. Never been done before. They're doing it for this fight. Why are they doing that? They're doing that because the next fight that either one of these two guys is going to be in, or possibly both of them, is likely to be a five-round fight. If Leon Edwards wins, he'll probably be challenging for the welterweight title next. If Nate Diaz wins, he'll probably be challenging for the welterweight title next. I think he'll jump the queue straight away if he beats Leon. But what you've also got, there's a whole load of different moving chess pieces you've got in play here. Conor McGregor's facing Dustin Poirier. If Conor McGregor gets beat by Dustin Poirier, what does he do next? The obvious fight is the Nate Diaz trilogy. So by getting Nate into circulation, that's in play. If for some reason that fight isn't a goer and Jorge Masvidal does not beat Kamaru Usman, what's an obvious fight for Nate there? The Masvidal rematch. That fight is also in play. And it almost doesn't matter whether Masvidal wins or Nate wins. One way or another, you've got those three guys. They could all basically meet in various different scenarios. But by having that five-round co-main event fight, it tees everything up. It sweetens the pot for Nate to come back and have this fight first. And it's like, do this, get yourself back in the mix. There will be a big fight waiting for you, win, lose, or draw after this one. And that's how I think it's going to work out. I think we've got the Usman versus Masvidal fight. Common sense tells me that Usman will probably win that one, but you never know. You could have a pair of rematches coming off both of those fights. So you could have Usman versus Edwards, and you could have Masvidal versus Diaz, and one of those will be a title fight. And then you've got McGregor. McGregor could face Diaz. So by doing all of this stuff, and of course, McGregor, if he wins, Michael Chandler's already said this week, if Michael Chandler beats Charles Oliveira, he expects his first title defense to be against Conor McGregor. So what this does is it gives the UFC a plethora of different options. Nate Diaz is on the table. Masvidal's back on the table. Usman's still going strong. McGregor's still going. And McGregor will have an option whether he wins or loses against Dustin Poirier. And Leon Edwards has got the fight that he needs to earn himself that title fight that he's been chasing for so long. So the way I see it, it's all about giving them as many options as possible. And I think by doing that five-round non-title co-main event, it sets the table nicely. It means that whoever is going to elevate themselves up to a title fight is getting the potential five-round run out first. And it gives the opportunity for Nate Diaz to earn possibly a slightly bigger payday being a five-round fight to sweeten the pot, to get him back in the mix again. The John Jones thing, I think, sits completely separate. And I guess we'll talk about that in a sec. But the way this is all mapped out, I just think it's all about options and thinking multiple chess moves ahead. And I think the UFC have been really smart with this.
I agree with everything Simon said, and I agree with everything George laid out. I think on the books, it makes sense to get all this up and running, but I feel like when you're in a negotiation, if you can tie some of them big superstar names up and put them on a calendar, then when somebody's asking for more money, you have a stronger leg to stand on, right? Because you look at it and you go, I don't know if you've looked at this calendar, but it's pretty full, dog, and there's a lot of names that a lot of people want to tune in. Seems like we don't really need you to as much as you think we do. I think there's a little bit of that. I think there's a little bit of spite, you know, given a guy that obviously has been asking for a lot of money all of a sudden is happy. He probably got paid pretty well. So I think there's a little bit of that. But I also do think that it is kind of laying the foundation for the future of the UFC. And we'll see what the future is, man, because things are changing rapidly right now.
Yeah. I did want to go back to one thing Simon said. Simon, did you say that if Nate beats Leon, you think he's the next title contender?
Yeah, I do. I know that sounds slightly bananas because, you know, he's lost a fair few fights at 170. But if Jorge Masvidal beats Kamaru Usman and Nate beats Leon, you don't think the UFC are going to book that title fight? Because they will book that in a heartbeat.
Is that harder than Jorge versus Colby?
I don't know. Probably not. But it's probably easier to book, right?
Is the UFC signing Nate and putting in a position like that a subliminal message to Colby? Hey, get your act together and get involved somehow, or otherwise we're gonna sail right past you.
Like I said, it's all about options. Like and this is why this heavyweight thing is really interesting. You look at the welterweight picture; there are options there. You know, Leon obviously wants to be right in there. Nate Diaz is a bit of a wild card, but if he wins, he's in there. Colby is kind of the man on the outside looking in, but pedigree wise, you can't argue with the guy's credentials, right? So, but he needs to be fighting. He doesn't need to be on the outside looking in. So he's the one that the UFC have really got to put a rope around and drag him back in as well. You compare that with the heavyweight situation. I think it's very different. The heavyweight situation is you've got this brand new scary champion who everybody's like, wow, okay, he's just taken out the greatest heavyweight champion in UFC history. And then you've got the best fighter, my opinion, in UFC history, John Jones, waiting and ready to step up and face this guy. It is the biggest heavyweight fight that you could make. It is the biggest heavyweight fight you could make. And for Dana White to turn around at the post-fight press conference and say, well, Derek Lewis is the fight that makes sense. No, it isn't. Let's have some real talk here. Who watched Derek Lewis, Francis Ngannou 1? Because I did. Who wished they hadn't seen Francis Ngannou versus Derek Lewis 1? That was a can't miss fight. That was this fight is going to deliver all of Men in Black moment. Yeah, no, it was one of those fights where you couldn't see it sucking, and yet it managed to. It was a really bad fight, and it was like the anomaly in both guys' careers. And you know, we've not seen anything like that from either of them since, thankfully. But that fight was terrible. So if your plan B is a rematch of that, then there isn't much of a plan B if you're comparing fan interest. Yeah. People love Derek Lewis, but people who love Derek Lewis also know that when he fought Francis Ngannou, that fight didn't go very well. Even though he won, by the way, Derek Lewis won that fight. Let's not forget that. But yeah, Wasn't a fun fight to watch. There is only one fight to make. There is literally one fight to make for the heavyweight title. And this is why Jones is doing what he's doing. I don't agree with the way he's doing it. I don't think you should be negotiating publicly the way he's doing it. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to argue against the things he's saying. I think a lot of what he says is making a lot of sense. But it doesn't sit well. It doesn't win him a lot of support in the court of public opinion. You know, I think if all of this was done over a phone call or done over a Zoom call or done at a face-to-face meeting and you sit around a table and you thrash this stuff out, you know, I think if we get to what we want, which is that big fight, happy days, all is well. But all of this online social media stuff, I don't think it does Jones any good. And, you know, Jones is, for me, the greatest fighter to ever set foot in the octagon. He's brilliant. He's the ultimate technician. He can find a way to beat anybody on the planet. Can he find a way to beat the most terrifying striker, the most terrifying knockout artist to ever step into the cage? We all want to watch that fight. And, it is as big a fight as we can make in the UFC right now. So the money needs to be, we need to be talking top draw money. But I just wish all of this social media stuff would go away and they just get around the table and thrash this thing out. And if it gets made, great. If it doesn't get made, fine. But at least we know that, you know, the due process has happened. Because at the moment, Jones gets so much negative PR anyway, right? He doesn't need this. Just go and get it done quietly. Come out and say, guess what? I'm taking on the big, bad, scary champion and I'm going to beat him. Then everyone goes wild and we get the fight we want. But who knows?
What's the chance the UFC would grant him his release?
Zero. Absolutely okay. Zero. Less than zero.
And that's how I felt. But I got a twat who has just been bugging the crap out of me on social media. His name is, I think his name is Jesse, honestly. I think he's got one of these deals where him and the girlfriend, Sarah, because it says Sarah, but I'm just going to focus on Jesse. who keeps insisting to me that I got it wrong, that I'm some sort of a Muppet, to not believe that somehow another organization can buy him out or that the UFC could let him go. And but the problem is all this duking is happening on the Junkie Instagram. So I'm just kind of like kindly responding by saying, no, that's not going to happen. The UFC's not going to part ways. If it was on my Instagram and, you know, I could maybe go off a little bit more, I would. But, I mean, 6 weeks later, this guy keeps replying to a thread and pointing it out to me that this is what he said. So I couldn't remember what he said 6 weeks ago. I can't even remember what I was doing 6 hours ago. But I had to go back and look. And, yeah, he was saying he thinks that somehow they're going to part ways. And now because of what John Jones is saying, that he is – his comments are validated. But I was like, I got to ask the guys, but I just see a 0% chance the UFC lets them go. If John Jones decides not to fight for 5 more years, the UFC still hangs on to their contract. The same way when Miesha Tate said, see ya, and went off. She became a one exec, had a couple babies, and then she said, I think I want to fight. Guess what was waiting for her? A UFC contract. And the UFC had to decide, yes, we'll feature you on our organization, or, oh, sorry, it's just a formality. Feel free to go sign somewhere else. But the UFC are sticklers about holding those rights.
The thing with the thing with John Jones and the UFC, they've had a kind of a, I don't want to say fractious, but they've had kind of an up and down relationship over the years, right? John Jones has had a pretty colorful career, you know, away from the cage. There have been multiple scenarios where if the UFC wanted to take some sort of moral stand, they could have let him go. They've kept him on the books. He's repaid them insofar as he's been one of the greatest champions in the history of the sport, right? He's officially, he has a defeat, but in the eyes of everybody who knows what they're looking at, he's unbeaten, right? And he's done everything there is to do at 205 pounds. He's now left all of that behind voluntarily to step up and fight at heavyweight. And this whole cut me already business, That's just the man who's frustrated that he isn't getting a deal he wants. And we've seen it before. How many times has Conor McGregor retired and then suddenly he's had a massive fight signed? So, you know, this is nothing new. This is all part of public negotiation on social media. And, you know, it's not something I'm a massive fan of. If it gets the result that we want, then great. But yeah, they're not gonna come to terms on a release with John Jones when he's in his prime. You know, this isn't 45-year-old John Jones at the end of his career. This is a guy he's just bulked up. He's about to fight in a brand new weight class. Whoever he fights for, it's gonna be a massive fight. First fight at heavyweight. Can he cut the mustard at heavyweight? Can he take the big shots from the big men? We've not seen that yet. So it would be lunacy to let him go because he's not costing them a huge amount of money by not fighting. So, you know, they have to offer him fights as part of the contract. And then there's a negotiation over the fine detail. And that's what's happening right now. He'll fight. It's just whether he'll fight Francis Ngannou or not. Maybe he'll say, look, if you can't afford me to fight Francis Ngannou, maybe I'll fight Jairzinho Rozenstruik or I'll fight Curtis Blaydes or someone. And you can pay me $2 million for that. So who knows? He ain't going anywhere though.
Can I do an impromptu spinning back click?
Yeah.
One for the ages. Okay, I'm going to be the host, and I'm going to see how good you guys are here with the question I'm going to give you. All right, guys. Our next question is, the UFC has now signed Beneil Dariush versus Tony Ferguson. They have signed Michael Chandler versus Charles Oliveira for the vacant title. And then we also have Nate Diaz versus Leon Edwards in a co-main event on that same card, not for a title, but guess what? They're going 5 rounds. And yet that's UFC 262, and UFC 261 has 3 title fights with undisputed champions defending their title. Which one has more bang for your buck? You got 2 minutes on the clock, and Simon, you can lead off.
Give me 262. Give me 262 that they... The marquee division in the UFC, in my opinion, is 155-pound division. We have been waiting for what feels like an age to finally get the 155-pound title picture settled. We knew Khabib was retiring ages ago. Finally, the UFC have decided to sort of allow this and move on from it. And now the 155-pound division is back up and running again. There's probably six or seven contenders who could legitimately have a crack at winning this belt. And the way the division is, the belt could change hands multiple times over the next 12 to 18 months. It's a brilliant time if you're a UFC lightweight contender. You got Leon Edwards from my neck of the woods here in the UK. He deserves a shot at the belt. He's the highest ranked contender in the UFC welterweight division not to have fought for the title. The guy who has the belt right now is the last guy to beat him 8 fights ago. So that's a rematch I'd love to see. Nate Diaz is back in the mix. What doesn't matter what Nate Diaz is doing, who he's fighting. When he's on the card, I'm watching. He's one of the most exciting guys to watch. And then you got Shane Burgos, Edson Barboza, which that could steal the entire show. That's such an incredible fight. Two come-forward strikers who love to just stand and throw leather. That's an absolute banger of a fight. And then you've got Tony Ferguson, Beneil Dariush. One of those guys is going to move up into that upper bracket. Will it be Dariush, who hasn't been given the push? Or will it be Tony Ferguson, who bounces straight back into contention once again? Everywhere you look, there's bangers of fights. 261's great, and there's more title fights. But 262, for me, has a little bit more intrigue. Plus, you've got Jack Hermanson, Edmund Shabazian on that card as well. Everywhere you look, great fight. So give me 262.
Yeah, when you look at 261, I mean, really what it comes down to is not all these title fights always end up the way you want them, right? It makes sense on paper, but I don't really want to tune in to see a fight I've already seen. There's, I love Jorge Masvidal, but I don't know that a full yeah, right? I don't know that a full camp is really going to help him out here. It's a fight I've already seen. 262 has fresh matchups, controversial issues on there, or fighters on there. Who doesn't want to tune into those type of fights? I just can't get around 261. If you're going to put them head-to-head, you got to go 262. I love the controversy. I love the shit talk. It's going to be a lot of fun. Those are the matchups that I want to see.
All right.
Simon, did you add all 2 minutes, or did you think it was 2 minutes for the two of you?
I'll be honest with you, I didn't have a stop. I didn't have my stopwatch running. I was just talking, you know. I've been having you guys for not respecting the clock. I didn't even have a clock running, so.
He's on the other side of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Not so easy now,
That was my bell or buzzer or whatever the hell that was. Check out our spinning backclick series at youtube.com/MMAJunkieVideo. Simon was the host for the past year and a half or so when we were doing it. So I was reversing the roles a little bit. But yeah, sometimes if you don't have the clock handy, because when we start the show, we all have the clocks ready and we go. But there's times that once the show unfolds, you forget to hit the stopwatch. And all of a sudden you're like, when did I start? Oh, man, did so-and-so take a minute? How do you know? Because there's ways to maybe make up for it, but it's all on the fly and it's hilarious. We laugh about it so hard once the show's over, who went over, who goofed or whatever. So I figured I'd put the guys on the spot here. But Simon took a minute and 40 of the 2 minutes, and enough good with 20 seconds, but I still had to give him the buzzer. But it was hilarious. I thought maybe Simon thought he meant he gets his 2 minutes and then Goes gets his 2 minutes. Who knows?
It's all about me. I'm not interested in what Goes has got to say.
Just having fun, guys. But I'll tell you what, I think 262 pops more because of those names. There's something about being a badass, a 209er, whatever you want to call it. You know what I mean? A shit talker. And no disrespect to Zhang Weili. She was one half of arguably the fight of the year last year. And Rose always brings it. Valentina's as destructive as you can find in the UFC. She's been doing a number. And Jessica Andrade has done great at Bantam, Straw, and Fly. She deserves this title shot. And then Kamara versus Usman that's big business, folks. Masvidal is big, and Usman's starting to turn into one of the all-time greats, not only in the welterweight division before the UFC, but still, something about that lightweight division on display. And then Nate out of Leon out of nowhere going 5 rounds. It's pretty close. You could probably argue it either way, but I was thinking about last night, and my eyes were gravitating more towards the 262 card.
I'm trying to look up the odds, but really, the last time I looked, if you look at the odds, they're just telling you something different on paper. 262 is a lot closer, in my opinion. Hey,
the can we go back between the fighters, favorite, and underdog?
Huh?
The odds between the fighters, favorites, and underdogs?
Well, Usman's minus 380.
Wow. What's Valentina?
Valentina's minus 370.
Jeez.
Whaley is 175. You know, that's a little closer, but
I think Rose is going to win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we go back to John Jones for a second?
Sure.
Do you guys feel like this negotiation, this issue that they're having right now, is it all UFC versus John Jones, or is a little bit of it UFC versus everyone else? Because here's the thing. If you cave in, what's the first thing that happened when Conor McGregor started asking for shit and he got it? What did everybody else do, right? They put their hand up. They want some too. Is this them kind of drawing a little bit of a line too for the rest of the roster? You see guys like Derek Lewis throwing his hand up. I'll take eight. I feel like it doesn't all have to do with John Jones. And I think part of it too is he's saying 8 to 10 is too small. So let's just say his number's 15 or something. I don't know John Jones personally that well, but I feel like if you give that guy $15 million, you may never see him again. And if he does come back, I don't know that he'll still be the same guy that's as focused as he would be right now. And I think the UFC needs a
little bit of that. Because he's been offered 8 to 10? I didn't know that. He said that?
Well, no, he just said that 8 to 10 would be too small. I don't know if he was offered it, but I think
we had a gauge there. That helps a little bit. But if 8 to 10 is too small and he's asking for 20, see, I don't know how the UFC works in terms of how much they budge. Like, I believe Masvidal maybe asked for 2 million and they only wanted one. But in the end, if they gave him two, it's an extra million. But it's also double what they wanted to do. But if John's at 10 and he's saying that's less and he wants something like Masvidal, like double it to 20, sure, it's the word double. That's true. But it's also an extra 10 million. So that's the part we don't know, because we can never connect dots, because everyone likes to keep it private. And I've never thought that was good, because when things are public in other sports, it's always led to more money for the athletes. And in the sport, obviously, the sports continue to grow. TV gives those sports leagues more money. And the owners make more money as well. Everybody makes more money. Just the other day, I used the example of in the LA Lakers have a point guard named Dennis Schroeder, who turned down 4 years, $84 million, which is $21 million a year. And he's saying he's looking for 4 years, $100 million, which is $25 million a year. So it kind of gives us an idea of where he sits, and we could apply it to other players. And that's where we know, like, wait a minute, there's another guy that makes less and he's outplaying you this year. Maybe I'm on Team Lakers, or, you know, vice versa. But we kind of have more of an idea. With MMA, we're left out in the cold to really see who is the bad guy here, you know? And if you talk to enough UFC fighters, they'll tell you, oh, yeah, the UFC, they can be brutal. I think Luke Rockhold just recently said something as well. And then if you talk to the UFC, they say, the guy just signed an 8-fight contract. He only fought once, and now he wants to renegotiate. From our end, we're always getting hammered, you know? So I don't know, man. It's really, really tough for me to see. All I can tell you is those three that I mentioned earlier in the show, they signed. So they're figuring it out. I really want the UFC to figure it out. John Jones says he's not bitter towards getting underpaid in his past fights. He just wants going forward to get what's his. So I don't like that he's doing it publicly, but I don't know. Maybe he's right. I really don't know.
I assume that he's doing it because he thinks he's going to get a groundswell of backing. But this is John Jones, who's quite a polarizing character. You know, there are people who will ride or die with John Jones. There are people who absolutely can't stand him. So because of that, you're kind of dicing with death a little bit in terms of the court of public opinion. I think he's better off doing it behind the scenes. Just want to pick up a point that you said goes about if the UFC gives him $10 to $15 million, they might not see him again. That's not really what this is about, though. Like, it's you've got to pay the guy what he's worth. You've got to give him, you know, the appropriate amount of money for what he's actually going to go in there and do. And he's going to go in there with the scariest human being on the face of the earth and try and beat him. And that requires a big payday. I think Jones on social media tried to equate it to the Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder title fights. And how they did 800,000 pay-per-view buyers, and saying, do you think our fight would do 800,000 pay-per-view buyers? They earn X amount, 25 million each or whatever it was they got. Do you not think that we should be earning that sort of money as well? So, and this is the thing, Francis Ngannou needs to be getting paid as well. You know, he needs to be getting, you know, I know John Jones is the, you know, the longer established star and has been, you know, in the sport for all his time. And he's considered by many to be the GOAT, but you could argue he's the B-side. You could argue he's the B-side. A, he's the challenger. B, he's never fought at heavyweight before. And C, he's walked away from all the championship leverage that he had. If he moved up as the existing light heavyweight champion, I think that would have given him a little bit more leverage, but he's let that go and he's moved up to heavyweight, or he's moving up to heavyweight. He doesn't have the same leverage that he would have done if he was still the 205 champ. So I don't know. I mean, they should both be getting paid a truckload of cash.
Let me ask you this question in the chat real fast. There's a question in the chat that says, hey, is that Andre the Giant that keeps walking by behind you? I thought he had passed. No, it's actually my dad who keeps passing by.
I was going to say, when we get like a fighter's perspective, I thought it was Bigfoot Silva, but...
It's giving me the eyes right now. Sorry, Simon. I just had to get that jab in.
That's all right. I've completely lost my thread.
You were saying who's A side, who's B side. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say is this is a double A side situation for me. You know, I think you've got the guy who's stepping up and challenging is the guy with the resume, but the guy with the belt who is just torn through the who's who of the UFC heavyweight division and has done it in absolutely crushing fashion, then, you know, they should both be getting very, very similar paydays, and they should both be pretty chunky paydays at that. It's one of those. This is the biggest prize in the sport, in the hardest sport on the planet. So, you know, call it danger money, call it whatever you like, but these two guys both need to be getting paid, and hopefully they do. And fingers crossed, we'll get to see that fight. Maybe Allegiant Stadium at some point this year. NFL are talking about doing Roger Goodell said they want to be playing to full houses before the end of this current NFL season we're about to have. So if the Raiders are going to be playing to full houses at Allegiant, then why not slap an octagon in the middle of that field, maybe Q3, Q4 this year, maybe. Let's see it happen, because then you've got an event of that sort of scale that will generate the sort of buzz. You generate the ticket sales, you get the pay-per-view, give it a nice long run-up. Imagine they booked the fight now and said it's happening in November and just give it a real long, slow play run-up all the way up. They'll make an absolute killing on that, even if they pay them both big money, which they absolutely need to do. So, you know, as I think we've all said, the public negotiation thing, I don't necessarily think that helps. But all I want two things. Number one, I want to see the fight. Number two, I want both guys to get paid appropriately. So fingers crossed we get both of those, and everybody is happy by the time fight night rolls around, whenever that may be.
With what you guys know about salaries, what would you pay Ngannou and Jones for a stadium show? Just give me a rough number.
I think to even throw a number out there would be almost irresponsible, because we don't know the ins and outs of everything involved when it comes to, you know, the event side of things. I mean, in my head, I'm thinking they need to be getting paid in the region of $20 million each. If we're comparing this to boxing, obviously the business model is very different, but if we're talking about two guys getting in there and fighting, prize fighting, and this, you know, the UFC is the ultimate prize fighting arena, right? This is the best of the best in the ultimate combat sport on the planet. Then surely the two guys going for the heavyweight title, one of them being one of the greatest of all time, the other one being the guy who just took out the greatest heavyweight of all time. These two guys need to be on top dollar. This, my personal opinion, this should be the highest grossing fight, or, you know, the biggest payday for a fight in UFC history because of what's at stake.
The last base I saw that, you know, where things were public, where Connor, I think, gets a $3 million base, and then we know he gets a huge cut of pay-per-view, which, whatever you believe, can be anywhere between, it takes them from 3 to 10 or 20 or 25, I don't know, right? And or maybe even 30. I think I remember him once saying that the fight with Floyd was going to pay him four times more than he had ever made in MMA. So I did quick math, And I remember that fight gave 300 to Floyd and 100 to Connor. And so four times as much meant Connor had made as high as 25,000, sorry, 25 million in a UFC pay-per-view. And I attributed that to the 1.65 million pay-per-views that him and Nate Diaz sold when they fought the second time, which was the highest earning fight until he fought Habib, which was post his fight with Floyd. Hopefully you guys are keeping track there. So using that, obviously John Jones isn't as big as Connor, but he is a higher weight fighter who is moving up in weight, who has been a champ and vacated. So I think you should pay him like he's a champ because this is a special fight in a stadium. Get John Jones to at least that $3 million and go, look, we're going to meet you with what we met Connor. But now it's up to you and how much you and Fran sell, and we'll give you the pay-per-view cuts that can get you to 10, 15, or maybe even 20 if this thing goes through the roof where everybody wins. As far as Francis, he may have to be the B-side for this, unfortunately, because of just what John Jones is. But the UFC's kind of like really, really tearing John Jones down, and by the time the fight does come, it could be that Francis is the A-side and John Jones is the B-side. But as far as what they've accomplished in their career, John Jones has been pretty special, so I don't know. But Francis, I would imagine maybe they would either do the same for him or whatever contract they have, and maybe however it is that they've agreed how his title fights will be played out. Maybe he doesn't have a problem with what he's getting paid. But I don't know. I don't want to take credit for this because I think that's when someone comes up with a thought and you read it or a take or an angle and you read it, and then you use it as your own. I don't always like that. I mean, sometimes I may be thinking of that, but out of nowhere, I was reading something a while ago, and I wish I could give them credit. It was just a quick blurb on Twitter, but that person had pointed out that video that Dana White said, where he said, "The media, we got it done. You guys were against us in 2020, the pandemic. Remember that, guys?" Well, somewhere in there says, "But we had our biggest year." Well, if you had your biggest year despite all that, and now the fans are coming back and the numbers keep blowing up, then that money might be there to pay John Jones, is all I'm saying. And you may want to start getting to that arguable 15% cut of the pie that fighters are getting and start moving things up, because Ari Emanuel and Endeavor supposedly is getting all of it. Why would they do it with a company that's not obviously producing and is going to produce numbers? Because if they go public, you know, definitely everybody's going to know, you know, what kind of numbers are involved in a public company. It's soon to come anyway. Why not already start running your business, I guess, like some of these other sports leagues? So now that you hear what I said, I'm probably thinking John walks away with 15, Francis maybe with 10. How about you guys? Did you guys come up with any numbers?
Dude, the more and more I hear you guys speak, the less I think this fight is going to happen. Because these are all good points. But the UFC, the one thing they always hold on to is that business model and the way they look at things. They just look at things differently. And I don't think they're willing to cave, because I think they see that if they do, everyone else is going to want that kind of money, and it's going to turn this
all over. Not everyone else deserves it. Only Connor can come and go, "Oh, I heard you started working with John Jones." But if Connor keeps losing, you know, is he as attractive, or his number still as good? You know, I don't know. With Masvidal, Fry follows McGregor, and then Rousey and Lesnar are gone. I think they're the only ones that were producing numbers like that. And then there was your GSPs and Anderson Silva's. So who else is coming along the way that can really call for that type of cut of the pie where the UFC will go, "Nah, and we're okay with losing you"?
I think it's a one-time thing. I would give them more, but I just don't see the UFC doing this. Just the way Dana's acting already, from tweets, like Simon mentioned, social media, the reaction from that is already, John just did himself a really bad disservice in starting things off that way. I think if he just would have stayed quiet and done this behind closed doors, we would be all pounding the UFC going, "Why isn't this fight happening? We're waiting for this news. We don't hear anything. What are you guys doing?" Because he started things off the way he did, and it caused Dana to kind of strike back with a few things. Now, I mean, our sport has a lot of egos, and those are two of the biggest egos out there. They've been put aside before in the past. When you think about Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor, it all came down to money, right? Those are three huge egos. and somehow they made it work. But I don't know, man. This dislike. I mean, Dana said himself he doesn't really talk to John that often. Most of the conversations they have is through social media. So the more and more I think about it, I'm not so sure this fight's going to happen.
All right, we'll give Simon the final word on this topic, and the show's actually about to close anyway. But I did want to say one thing, and maybe it's just food for thought before Simon speaks. Gally from Toronto, who's listening to the show, says, could it be that the UFC caved in to Nate's demands? Or did Nate cave in because maybe, just like anybody else, you burn through your money? You know what I mean? Maybe did he cave to them? Anyway, what are your final thoughts, Simon?
The one thing I don't want to hear, and I think there is always the chance of this, is that line that we've heard from Dana White before, where he comes out and stands at the microphone and says he didn't want the fight. He didn't want the fight. We offered him the fight. He didn't want the fight. And we've had this before. They do want the fight. We know that they want the fight. It's, will they accept the terms being presented to them? And I think there's an awful lot that's going to happen between now and that fight being signed. And I just hope that common sense prevails. UFC doesn't want to expose themselves financially. I get that. But also, we need to make sure that the biggest fights get made. That's what made the UFC what it was. They always put on the biggest fights possible. There were no layup fights. The best fought the best. That's what took the UFC above boxing in terms of popularity and in terms of the speed of growth and all the rest of it. It's because people were fed up with the alphabet, all of the alphabet titles and people protecting their investment and champions not facing other champions. Because the UFC were not quite the only show in town, but were clearly head and shoulders above the competition, the best fought the best. And we knew, the debate over who the best fighter was at a given weight class, that was settled in the cage. That's what makes the sport what it is, and has made the UFC that multi-billion-dollar company that we're talking about right now. But what also comes with that success, they got to pay the fighters. And, fingers crossed, everything happens the way it needs to. They come to a suitable agreement with John. They come to a suitable agreement with Francis. And we get this fight on, because this will be the biggest heavyweight fight in UFC history. And I think it will just elevate the sport to another level, right at a time where sports gradually beginning to emerge out of this COVID pandemic, with all the fans gradually getting back into their seats. What a way to say, guess what? This sport is massive now, and everybody out there needs to see this fight. That's the fight you got to put on. If it means throwing some extra dollar bills on there, I think it's what needs to be done.
Yeah. And in this ESPN era, I hope the UFC figures it out and they start giving those fighters a bigger piece of that pie. I know it won't get to 50-50 like all the major sports here in America are. And Simon, I don't know if it's 50-50 with like EPL, for example, and the clubs versus the players. But everything that I've ever read hasn't been anywhere in that 10 to 20 range. And things have usually settled somewhere around 15. The UFC, I'll give them this, they don't need these fighters. It's sad to say that, but if Nate or Nick or GSP or any of them want to go, that's why Dana White so nonchalantly goes, oh, well, if they're not ready and they want to retire, so be it. He used to sweat it when it was Tito or Randy or Chuck, and they were still building that damn thing, But then all of a sudden he created this monster that's the UFC, and as you've noticed, if a fighter wants to go away, they have no problem with it because the machine creates new ones. And now the machine just rolls and rolls and rolls and rolls, and they have made it into a money-making machine so that when Conor does come back, or Masvidal wants to fight, or Jones wants to fight, or Lesnar wants to return, or whoever, those are just cherry on the Sundays. But every fucking Saturday, they're making tons of Sundays, you know what I mean? So they're always going to make the money. The rest is just gravy, man. They're just cherries, whatever you want to call it. And that's when they have these big windfall years, and they love it. So when they have the opportunity, they'll do whatever they can to make it happen, even somebody coming off a loss. But trust me, that money-making machine, it's in motion, and it ain't stopping.
Man, I don't know. I feel like we're going to get Derek Lewis and Francis Ngannou. We're all going to be pissed for about a day or two. And then Conor McGregor is going to come out and do something. Nate Diaz is going to come out and do something. And before we know it, we're going to be talking about that. And poor John Jones is going to be sitting over there with his hands up in the air. I just feel like the writing's on the wall, guys.
All right. Well, listen, this has been a fun hour, man, discussing all of these news stories. Simon, glad to have you with us. And as you can tell, we love chopping it up with you. I remember doing it in the pandemic where we would just talk about pop culture or the pandemic itself. So count on it, please. And hopefully, if your time allows, as a family man and as a hardworking sports editor for the Daily Express, hopefully you can carve out some minutes for us. Sorry we took the whole hour from your life. I think Ghost probably told you, just jump on for 10 or 15 and look at us. We actually hogtied you for an extra 45 minutes. But it's always a pleasure with you, my man.
No, it's a pleasure to be on. And it gives me an hour's respite from my crazy kids. So it's all good. So always happy to jump on and talk fights with you guys. And as I think I said the other day, you know, once this pandemic has eased off a little bit and we're all allowed out to play again, at some point when you're back in the studio and I haul my backside over to Las Vegas, we will maybe we'll do this thing in person one day as well.
That's the goal, man. We definitely wanted to do this because we also wanted to give you a nice little send off because we are going to miss you, man. You're one of our, I know it sucks to say, but one of our favorite coworkers. And
ex-coworkers goes.
Yeah. We can chop it up about just about anything, you know, and just before we even started the show, we were talking about the MTV challenge, George. He's getting into it now.
Oh, cool. All right. Yeah. Don't forget, folks, you can follow him on social media at Simon Head Sport. For you Brits and for anybody in Europe that's going to identify with what he covers, I think Simon said he's going to cover a lot of different sports. I'm sure football, which is our version of soccer, but they call it football out there, will be covered. Check out his work at Daily Express. And like he said, Brit Pack with Sandu, Shamat Kaur Sandu, also a former junkie. They drop their podcast. I catch it on Apple Podcasts. But if you go to his Substack, you can get all the links there for all the other different podcast platforms. Simon, thanks again, man. It's always been a treat with you. And keep in touch, please.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And keep on crushing it. Keep on crushing it. Looking forward to I'll carry on listening from this end of the pond. And we'll jump on whenever we can.
Thank you, sir. Folks, enjoy your weekend. Remember, Bellator is back and they have a free version of Showtime for those of you that want to catch it, including Pitbull Frady, one of the best lighter weight classes fighters in the world. He's a champ for Bellator. He is going to be defending against Emmanuel Sanchez as part of the 16-man tournament. That's a semifinal. The winner gets AJ McKee. And, of course, keep it locked on MMA Junkie for all the coverage of all the top organizations. April's heating up. We got some good cards. We got a lot of news for you. Keep it locked on MMA Junkie as always. We'll see you Monday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, with another edition of MMA Junkie Radio. For Ghost and Simon, I'm George. Have a nice weekend. Go out there and be a champion.